Hey everybody, it's Michael Arias, and I want to tell you a story about what life is like for your patients. Picture this. It's about 11:30 p.m., and let's just say Joe, patient, is sitting on his couch, waist deep in a Netflix binge. He bites a popcorn kernel a little too hard and hears a crack. Time for a dentist appointment. But he can't call the office at night. So he goes online and hits the request an appointment button on his dentist's website. But he won't hear back from them until 9 a.m. on Monday, when the front desk gets the appointment request. By then, he'll have looked for another dentist. If this dentist had Local Med's real-time online scheduling, he'd have an appointment booked before the opening credits were over. I know, because I've been that patient. Local Med makes scheduling a dentist appointment as easy as getting an Uber, booking a flight, or ordering a pizza. With a few clicks, your patients can instantly book an appointment directly into your practice management software. No calls necessary, no dreaded personal contact required, and no waiting to hear back from a front desk. It's the only online scheduling system that works in real time, and it's not just for emergencies. You choose what appointment types and time slots are available, and your patients can book an appointment 24/7, 365, or 366 on leap years, right? That means you stay in control of your schedule and earn new patients. The button can go wherever you control your online presence, your website, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. Most practices increase their website conversion anywhere from 35 to 70%, which means Local Med usually pays for itself within a single month. This is the way online scheduling should be. I never want to schedule an appointment the old way again, and your patients don't either. Check it out for yourself at localmed.com or call 888-203-7531 for a free demo. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Dental Marketer Podcast. And let's just jump into this episode because, to be honest with you, I have to catch a flight in about 20 minutes. I'm on my way to Breakaway, so I need to get to it. And I was like, oh snap, I need to record an intro and outro. So here we go, guys. Let's get into this. I had the wonderful privilege to talk with Vic Kapoor. Him and his wife have acquired two practices, Needham Family Dental and Waldheim Family Dental. And he's also starting up his own software, which is called Practice, P-R-A-C-T-Y-S. And it's interesting. It's so interesting. And he's going to explain it with much greater detail, but it's kind of like taking the operations side, the operations part of your whole practice all in one. It takes it over, which is great, you know what I mean, fantastic. But in this interview, we talk about how, you know, a little bit of his background. He comes from a software company, and he knows about startups, he knows about starting up and failing and so forth. One thing I liked about this interview that I got out of it is how he feels about DSOs, and also how you shouldn't be afraid to test out hypotheses, right? And at the same time, how, because of testing out these hypotheses, he was able to create a software that can manage the operations, which is interesting, because a lot of the times, you know, testing out hypotheses or testing out theories is kind of risky. And but no, not for him. He took it on. And so his practice, he acquired both practices. And one thing that was interesting is when he acquired the second practice, they weren't truthful. They weren't real with him, saying about the new patients that were coming in, the amount of patients that were in the practice, and so forth. So he got a pretty much like a rude awakening, right? When he acquired the practice. Once he acquired it, listen to what changes he made in order to make it successful, or at least break even today, right? And he barely acquired it, so he's breaking even, and he's on track for the right goal. And it's amazing to see the way his mind works, because he has certainty only because he predicts the outcome, but he predicts the outcome because he knows what he's doing right now, right? And it's all... it's all like in a sequence. It's all like in a campaign, right? But like it's all in a sequence. And it's amazing to see how you know, sometimes we're like, oh no, how are we going to be doing in our practice? I don't know. I don't know if I should buy this CBCT or something because I don't know how much you're going to be making. But if you know how much you're going to make, right, ahead of time, you'd be more comfortable. Even if you're like, are you sure you're going to make that much? Or am I sure not? It's interesting how he manages his marketing budget for his practice as well. You'll see how he manages it when he's having slow months and when he's having good months, and how it all stays in the same range. So it's good to know that you can have a lot more certainty in your business, especially in a startup, but if we do a lot of the steps that Vic Kapoor kind of mentions out. So guys, without further delay, here is Vic Kapoor.
So, Michael, I did my MBA mm-hmm. long time ago. Mm-hmm. I won't tell you how long ago, but that would give my age away. But
it's okay.
Then for about 15 years, I ran a software company doing software development, medical billing, and medical transcription, mm-hmm. and had an opportunity to get out of it in 2012. And then in 2012, I wanted to do something different and went out and raised a bunch of money to start a supply chain company and mm-hmm. ran that from 2012 to 2014. Mm-hmm. And we could not raise enough money to take the company national. We needed to raise a bunch of money. We raised a little over $1 million.
Oh, wow.
And somebody in California was faster to the market than we could, and we had to then shut down the company. And then I kind of took some time to reflect what I want to do, and I decided that I wanted to get into the dental space with my wife, who's been a dentist and had been running her practice for about from 2006 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was run like a small business, and I decided I wanted to put my, you know, business background and systems background to use, and joined her practice full time in 2014,
mm-hmm.
and started managing the operations and grew the practice. We were doing about $850,000 in revenue.
Oh, wow.
So we closed this year, we'll close around $1.5 million in production.
Wow.
So did that, and then in 2016 decided that we needed to expand, and I also wanted to test out some hypotheses I had in my mind about what works in a dental practice and what doesn't, and then mm-hmm. we acquired a second practice in 2014. And unfortunately, the practice was a five-operatory practice, but the numbers were misrepresented to us mm-hmm. by the brokers. We were supposed to have close to 2,000 active patients, and when we really acquired the practice, it turned out it had only about 250 active patients.
Oh, wow.
So that was a little bit of a setback, but, you know, we put our mind to it, and we took that practice in 2016. We closed first year with $350,000 in production.
Mm-hmm.
The practice when we took over was doing about $650,000 in production, a lot of stuff which was off the books kind of stuff. But this year we're going to close at 2 years later at $600,000 production again.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So while doing that, I wanted to test these hypotheses and see what can be automated in a dental practice and what cannot be automated, because it's a lot of moving parts in a dental practice, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And with my software background, I'm not a programmer, I'm a business person. I decided to launch a company earlier this year, like really beginning of this year,
mm-hmm.
where we started building a software to see what non-clinical processes in a dental office can be automated. I am in the process of launching that product. The beta has been launched. The company is called Practice with the PRACTYS,
mm-hmm.
and we are officially launching the product this Friday, December 7th, in outside of Boston, Metro Boston area.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So
that's kind of my background.
That's a lot. It's good. It's really good. So like, let's rewind a little bit. Why did, when you left the software company that you were doing medical developing and billing and stuff like that, why did you want to do something different?
I'd been doing that for 15 years. I founded a company. I had an exit. So, you know, I wanted to do something new. And I wanted to do something more in the product space rather than the service space. Although, you know, here I am a few years later, I'm back in the service space.
Yeah, it's okay. And then from that point on, you started something different and you raised, how did you raise money like that?
Came out with a concept and then went to the local VC and angel community and, you know, got people really excited about the product. I mean, I think that idea is still good. We were trying to disrupt the commercial food supply chain. So it was one of those big Amazon kind of ideas, but it means it requires a lot of money. And, you know, Boston is not necessarily a great startup place. It's a great growth capital place. A lot of the startup money, actually, we have fallen from number two to like number four in the country. A lot of the startup money comes in California, the risk capital, and we just couldn't raise enough money. Somebody in California is still, you know, pursuing with the idea, and they've raised a bunch of money and are doing very well.
How can someone find like a local VC or an angel investor?
There are a lot of resources you have to get. You know, you have to attend networking meetings. There's Crunchbase. There's lists available, you know, especially if you're tied into the local college and university system, you know, you get referred from one person to the other to the other. So it's not that difficult to find the names. But having, you know, the deal flow to them is so high that they don't see enough. They see so many deals that they don't get excited about too many deals. So the key is, how do you get them to write a check?
Got you. And then throughout this whole time that you're doing this, your wife was, she was with one practice, right? What practice was that?
Right. She was practicing at Needham Dental, and she's still practicing there. She practices about 4.5 days a week, and she just hired an associate there so she can start training and cutting down to 3.5 days.
Wow, that's really good. That's really good. And then what hypothesis, what made you want to start testing out hypotheses? Like, why did you start thinking that?
Well, my thinking is that, you know, dental industry has kind of just stayed behind when it comes to technology. I mean, we're still using, you know, the two leading practice management systems are from the 90s at best, like, you know, Dentrix and Eaglesoft. There's some cloud-based systems, but they don't have all the features. So we were just trying to understand, you know, if you really look at a dentist, a modern-day dentist, there's so many regulations now for a dentist that, and the competition with DSOs, that they're having to wear multiple hats, one of a CFO, one of a chief marketing officer, of a compliance officer, you know, of a HR administrator. And my thinking is that we can, for cheap dollars, we can automate some of these things for a dental offices. But they still need to do all these things. They still need to do a background check. They still need to hire a person. They still need to do OSHA compliance. They still need to look at the numbers and see what's going wrong on a real-time basis rather than, you know, 90 days later from an accountant, a bookkeeping report. So we kind of decided, okay, how can we automate all these non-clinical processes? We didn't want to get into the clinical aspect of it because, you know, that's a crowded space.
Yeah.
And our objective, long-term objective, is that, you know, we should be able to give to a dentist every single role which is needed in a large corporation to be successful through our software.
Okay. And then, so let's start getting into your business, right? Like, as far as when it comes to the practices, how much did it cost to acquire each practice?
So, you know, Metro Boston is a highly competitive and saturated space for practice per capita. And, you know, practices get snatched up, right, even before they come to market. So you have to build your relationships and you have to be ready to write the offer at, you know, 0.8 to 1 times collections. And I'm also seeing offers now, actually, you know, in today's day and age, I'm seeing offers being written at above collections. So it's just how the market is in Boston. Everybody wants to be in Boston. The reimbursements are higher than national averages. And, you know, in spite of having three dental schools here, there's still a shortage of dentists just because there's so many DSOs now.
Wow.
So we, you know, when I was really confident about my marketing skills and, you know, putting the systems in place. So it was really, I wanted to be in an area which is, which I know there would be a lot of population turnover, people coming, people going. So as long as that criteria met, it didn't really matter, you know, what type of practice it was, because I know that in 3 to 5 years we'll be, you know, breaking even and cash flow positive. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hoping, and we are on target to do that.
Awesome.
I mean, the first one became cash flow positive very quickly, but that was also because we were drawing very little salary. But now that I'm paying salary to dentists, you know, I'm looking at cash flow break even on a real numbers basis, on EBITDA basis, rather than on gross margin basis, where a lot of dentists look at their take home as part of the profit, which I don't look at it that way.
Why? Why don't you look at it that way?
Because that's really not true profit, right? Like, so you have to be able to say that if it wasn't that dentist working, but somebody else working, what would you take home after you paid the dentist out?
So if you
really look at any other business, you have to look at profit after, you know, all the salaries. You can look at profit before salaries, because that's a skewed number.
Yeah, I get you. Okay. And so the first practice, how much did that cost to acquire?
So that was a while ago. So we acquired that for under $300,000. But that was because the dentist was not doing well. And, you know, it was right next to where we lived. And, he needed to retire because of health reasons. Mm-hmm. And so it was open only 1 day a week, 1.5 day. So,
oh, wow.
You know, yeah.
So small,
that's,
yeah. And then
the more opportunity practice. Yeah.
Has it expanded more or no? It's still four.
No, so we have not expanded the operatories, but obviously we have maximized our utilization. We are open almost 7 to 7 many days, and if it was up to me, I'd be open Monday through Sunday, because I look at it like an airline business where, you know, or a mall business, you have to look at number of hours times revenue per hour, but my wife is not so excited about that part, and so as we grow and add associates, I'm sure we'll be opening more hours.
Yeah, got you. And then this one, Waltham Family Dental, how much was that one to acquire?
It was a little over 600, but we clearly overpaid for it in the hindsight.
When did you find out you overpaid for it? Or how did you find out?
when there were no patients coming in after the first month.
Gotcha. That's so when, like, the numbers were skewed, right?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Got you. But so now it's doing better.
It almost became a scratch business for me.
Okay, got you.
Yeah.
And then right now, I know you said there's a lot of DSOs. How do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about the DSOs everywhere?
I don't feel, you know, I think there will always be need for a family-owned practice, but, you know, what happened with the hospital industry about 10 years ago, just the competitive landscape is such, the regulations coming down. Independent dentistry, what we know today, won't exist. I would say 80% would be DSO-owned. And it doesn't have to be like a pure DSO. It could be a group partnership. It could be, you know, a bunch of dentists owning multiple practices. Just the economies of scale won't. You know, a single dentist in Boston doing $700,000 cannot make money anymore. I mean, that's the reality of it. It's just not possible, just because the cost of living. Sure, if you want to be in upstate Maine and willing to drive 2.5 hours from Boston, you can. So it depends where you want to be, what the neighborhood is like. But in Metro Boston, if you are a 4-operatory, 1,200 square feet, single dentist practice, unless you are full fee for service and you don't do any write-offs and you've been established for a while, it's very difficult for you to make money.
Well, so how?
And when I say money, I'm talking about like a good salary. I don't mean like, okay, you make $120,000, because that just doesn't go far enough in Boston.
Well, so how much would, to live comfortably in Boston, how much would someone need to take home?
I mean, if you're not taking home $250,000, you can't afford rents in Boston. And
really?
That's gross, right? So net, you're, you know, by the time you bring home net, it's half of that. You know, you're giving $100,000 in taxes.
Mm-hmm. And this is for dentists or just who's
in
this category? Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
So yearly, $250,000.
Right. I mean, to have, you know, a good life where, you know, you can pay a mortgage just because cost of living is so high.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. And then right now, both practices, are they like general or is it one pediatric or?
No, they're both general, but we do have specialists in both the practices.
What kind of specialists do you have?
Endo and perio.
Got you. And then is it all fee for service or PPO?
Oh,
you
no.
Accept anything?
Yeah, PPOs. No Medicare, but PPOs.
Got you. In the future, do you plan to drop PPOs or accept more Medicare, or what is it looking like?
I don't plan to accept Medicare at all because just it doesn't work into my model of, you know, the effort to reward ratios in there.
Mm-hmm.
However, would we drop some PPOs? Maybe we could drop that in the practice, which is in a like a high disposable income neighborhood, but in the other one, I don't think we'd be able to. And especially if I'm having other dentists work for me, and they're high producers, they want to stay busy, and that's the only way you can attract patients. So you do have to play the PPO game.
Got you. And then right now, how's like profits for you guys with when production and collection, like for Needham right now? How's that going?
Oh, that's rocking on, you know, all four fronts. So it's doing really well and kind of sustained the other practice for first 2 years.
Oh, okay. And then the other practice, Waldheim, how are the numbers looking
cash
like for
flow,
that?
Cash flow break even at this point. So we're not putting anything out of pocket that includes debt service reserves. So we know we are able to meet our debt obligations and not have to put anything out of pocket. I would like to be at a place where I'm able to start, you know, able to kind of put a manager and a manager can draw a salary. And that would mean profitable to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there as yet, but that's also because I'm only open three total days, 24 hours a week. And we're at a point now where we're starting in January, we're going to be opening 40 days a week.
So the Waldheim one, there's no manager there?
I've been spending 50% of my time managing that and other 50% of time building my software company.
Ah, okay. And then for both practices, how many days are they open?
So the one in Needham is open 6 days, and one in Waldheim is now going to be open 4 days.
And the hours? How are the hours?
Hours are, you know, whenever people need to come in.
For both or no?
So for both, yeah. We're open, you know, 9 to 7, 10 to 7.
Ah, okay. Pretty much every, all throughout the time, right? That's good. It's flexible.
Yeah.
How many new patients are you getting currently right now per month?
I'm averaging about 30 to 35 in Waldheim and 25 to 30 in Needham.
25 to 30. And then what are you doing for marketing and advertising?
So I do everything. Marketing for me is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of what I focus a lot of my time on. And I look at marketing, I ramp it up, ramp it down based on my cost of acquisition per customer is under $100 and I want to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I know that my next month is looking slow from a hygiene perspective, then, you know, I will ramp up marketing the previous month, whether it's my Google ad or whether it's my EDDM or whether it's... So I play around with everything.
Do you have a marketing budget?
I like to spend, 5 to 6% of my revenue on marketing every year.
5 to 6. So whenever you have to ramp it up, you're probably spending 6%, right?
Right, but then, you know, there are months I'm ramping down, so it averages out to about 5, I would say.
5. What has been, like, your best ROI so far?
That's very hard to do unless you have a real tracking software in dental to kind of figure out. A lot of people say, oh, for me, Facebook works great. I get 100 new patients. I doubt when people talk like that because, you know, marketing, as the name suggests, is marketing. It's creation of brand. It's making sure people refer people. It's keeping your name alive and warm and fuzzy with the people if and when they need a dentist for an emergency. So there's no one thing I can say that has worked really well. I would say a combination of the all is like a good drug.
Gotcha. What do you feel like has, or can you tell something that has not worked at all or no?
Which has not worked. We have tried things like, you know, we hired a marketing manager at one point who wanted to do like a local fundraisers and this and that. But I realized that she was not vested in the company and was working on a contract basis, that that didn't work well. You know, so it's better to train your employees who feel vested rather than trying to get somebody from outside to do it. That doesn't work really well, in my opinion. That doesn't mean somebody else can make it do it. And it may work well at when you have economies of scale. If you have four practices, it's different than when you have one practice.
Got you. How many employees right now do you currently have?
Oh, boy, we're up to about 20 now.
Oh, wow. But and together, right? All together?
Yeah, all together.
How do you find the employees? Like, how do you find, like, good team members?
That's the biggest challenge I've had in growth of my practice. It's not finding patients, but it's finding employees. In Boston, they passed a law a couple of years ago in Massachusetts where every dental assistant had to be certified within a certain amount of time or registered. And that just drained the pool. And there's a huge shortage of dental assistants in Massachusetts because of that. And the salaries just kind of skyrocketed. You know, average person was making 16 to 20 an hour is now making 20 to 25 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. That's and it's created a huge, but, you know, my philosophy always has been and will continue to be that I want to overpay my employees and I want to treat them like my family. And I haven't had a single employee, I would say one in the last 10 years, who has left because of she wanted more money, but mostly employees leave because of other situations, and I have no control over those. You know, training an employee is very difficult.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're right. It is. What would you suggest for someone who's like doing a startup, right? Or someone who's really tight on a budget and they want to do that philosophy or they want to do what you're doing? Like, I want to overpay, but that's just not in the books right now. Like, I almost have to like underpay, but I really want... I need an employee, right? Because, you know, in a practice, you need to delegate. So what would you suggest in that scenario?
That's a great question. But my suggestion when I did my startup is you have to do a pro forma financial statement, which addresses that question up front, because it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to start making money on day one or even on day 90. So you have to hire the right employees, period. There's no going around that. Because that makes and breaks your business. If so, you're spending 50% of your time managing bad employees, it's taking away from, you should be really managing your patients and their work.
Gotcha.
And that's been a big challenge for me as well, not having the right employees in spite of overpaying them or paying them well. You know, managing front desk employees has been a big challenge.
To you, paying them well, is it like a couple dollars over average, or what is paying well?
Paying well means not only a couple of dollars over average, but good benefits and a very good and regular bonus plan, so they feel they're part of the growth.
Oh, okay, got you. How does the bonus plans normally work for you?
We've tinkered with different things. Sometimes we have done percentage of salary for annual bonuses, and sometimes we do rolling average for 3 months. So there are different things we have looked at.
How would you give a bonus to like an assistant?
That would be based on the collections or production of the office, because they're not involved with the actual production. So that would be based on the based on the total monthly numbers.
Okay. And then for the manager, is it based on, how do you base their
bonuses? For the managers, it's based on collections. So we look at new patients or we look at collections and we base it on that.
Got you. That's interesting. That's really good. I like that. And then right now, how saturated would you say dentistry is in your community?
Where our Needham office is, we call it the dental mile because I think there are 30 practices within like 3 miles,
wow.
2 mile radius. Yeah, so it's as saturated as it gets.
So you would have to really, your marketing would have to be pretty unique, right? For example, do you get a lot of people who kind of go to you and then say, oh, yeah, I just want a second opinion, and then you never see them again?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's a mix of everything.
Yeah. How do you handle it when someone says, like, oh, you're this much, but the person down the street, or like the person down the street didn't see that many cavities, or they didn't charge me that much? Why are you doing that much?
When it comes to charging, we really have no good answer to that because most of the patients come with their insurance plan and mm-hmm. that determines the cost. So that question doesn't come out that much. Whether the cavities are determined or not, like we learned our lessons early on when we started that it's better to tell the patients everything up front. You don't have to schedule everything on day one, but it's better from a clinical compliance point of view and liability point of view. You're better off as a dentist making sure that everything is documented well and expressed clearly. And then, you can start with the quadrant one or you can start with the most urgent crown or whatever else is needed. But you don't want to not tell. And if that's the patient who feels that you're over, prescribing dentistry, then you really don't want that patient. And he will leave or, you will part ways eventually.
Yeah.
And there are patients who come back after a few years because they realize that, what you had told them was correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's making sure that the dentists are well trained in that thought process.
Yeah. What is your vetting process when you're hiring an associate?
Well, I look at their numbers, and believe it or not, most of associates, when I ask them what is your production for last month or collection for last month, they don't know that.
Oh, wow.
And when I ask them what's your revenue per exam, they don't know that. So I actually look at the reports, and then other than that, I'd like to kind of spend time with them, like mm-hmm. going out to dinners and meeting them for drinks and kind of understand their personality, because if they have a good personality, we can teach them how to do comprehensive treatment planning.
Mm-hmm.
But if the personality rubs you in the wrong way, it's not a person that's very difficult to, and then once the dentist is in, you really can't do anything. And we've made our mistakes. We had one associate who came in. I'll tell you two examples, actually. Mm-hmm. We had one associate, she came through a recruiter, and she would sit in her consult room having lunch and would not talk to any employees or anybody in the office.
Mm-hmm.
She would come to her work, and that obviously, she lasted 3.5 days. We had another associate who came in when we started this practice, and great personality, but came from a corrections background where he was working on mostly, prison population.
Mm-hmm.
And he only loved doing extractions. He had never done a crown for 7 years he had worked there.
Wow.
So,
wow.
We started seeing a lot of these treatment plans where there were just a lot of extractions, and he lasted for about. So we went through trial and error process and found some good people. Now my associates have been with me for 2 years each.
Yeah. Wow, that's really good. And so right now you have a system to close, right? Like when you sell, you close your treatment and things like that. What's your numbers like on that? Like, is it good percentage or your closing rates pretty good or?
I kind of look at it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that one out of my every three hygiene patient converts into restorative.
How do you do that?
Well, that's kind of the average I look at. So that's
the
benchmark I know that they should. And so if I'm meeting that criteria, then I know that I'm going to be busy.
Mm-hmm.
So if my hygiene is full, I know that my my restorative is going to be full.
What does your, do you know what your hygienist says in order to accomplish that goal?
Well, it's a team effort. I mean, it's not the hygienist.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's everybody, right? You have to, it's like, you know, I hate to give this example in dentistry because it's become so retail. And by no way, when I say this, I mean to diminish anyone. But, you know, when you hear those ads on radio and they repeat the 1-800 number 20 times.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time you've left your car, you remember the 1-800 number. Because mm-hmm. they know that if you repeat it enough number of times, and that's essentially what you have to do in a dental office. The hygienist has to say the same thing, then the assistant has to walk and say the same thing, and then the doctor has to repeat the same thing. Hey, there's this cavity which we need to take care of. And then the front desk has to say the same thing. Hey, this is the cavity which doctor recommended. And by the time you say it five times, the patient is going to take care of it. And believe it or not, that's in their best interest to do it, you know, mm-hmm. unless there's some unforeseen circumstances.
So how does that system work? Do you guys discuss that in the very morning, like at a morning huddle, and say like, okay, Michael needs like 10 fillings and this and that, right? Like, let's all make sure we repeat it, or how does it work?
In one office better than the other, and that's a little bit of a failure of systems on my part. I can never get one of my dentists to come on time. And so she's always 10 minutes late, and we end up missing the huddle in one of my offices. Mm. But yes, that is the objective, that we do a huddle and we go over the daily plan. And you know, it's not about do they, like, you know, we're not trying to sell anything. We're just trying to make sure that the patient is aware that this is a medical condition. It needs to be looked at and treated. And, you know, if it was something else, we would do the same way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And so it shows then, right? It shows like whenever your associate, right, your dentist is going late and doesn't show up, like it shows in the numbers? Like, hey, it's not closing.
It shows in more other things, you know. It creates a day which is not balanced well, right? There are issues which come up because then you're running late and it has a ripple effect. But mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm sure it's showing up in the numbers as well.
How do you handle that? How do you handle two things? How do you handle irate employees, or how do you handle employees who are great, but they have that one pet peeve that, you know what I mean, like they show up late or something like that?
Just like any other relationship in life, you have to look at the good things and overlook some of the nuances. I mean, there's no, you know, and you have to have a lot of meetings and work, and if it's issue-related stuff, you discuss the issue. That doesn't mean you don't go out and have a drink afterwards, but that's how you have to handle it. It cannot be thrown under the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that monthly. We go over, you know, things which come up every month and have an office meeting and ordering lunch and make sure that, you know, everybody makes a list of things which need to be addressed, and we keep on addressing those things, and 9 out of 10 times it's the same things being addressed most of the time.
So okay, got it. So far, what's been, would you say, like your biggest fail or pitfall?
The biggest challenge is getting the right employees and then getting them to conform to what your vision of the practice is, right? Because you're mm-hmm. the owner. And so you have to make sure that your vision and their vision aligns and you both work for the same goal. You know, it's like rowing a boat.
Mm, yeah. You all have to be aligned at the same time. Is it hard? Yeah. Is it really, really hard, especially in the Boston area, to find, like, employees?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to find employees. I mean, you're competing with, you know. So what we used to do, we used to look for trained employees, and then we kind of 2 years ago decided we're going to look for good people and train them as long as they have some basic work skills and experience. So we, you know, if somebody understands mathematics well, we know we can train them in, you know, accounts and receivables and credits and debits.
Mm-hmm.
The dichotomy in dental industry is really, you know, tremendous because you have all these physicians who are overachievers and super specialized, you know, their masters and PhDs and, you know, postdocs, post-DMD. And then mm-hmm. you have the entire staff level working under them who are for more or less are all high school graduates. They don't even have college degrees. Like most of the hygienists are associate degrees, and most of the front desk and assistants are, you know, high school graduates with little college background. So there's no middle management that exists in the industry. You know, it's starting to happen now with group practices and DSOs, but it's still very difficult to find.
So what do you want to see different in dentistry then?
Well, the numbers, I mean, dentistry at the end of the day is still a mom and pop business, right? Average dental office in the United States makes $650,000. So you just can't afford to, hire a CFO. You can't afford to hire an HR person. And so the one advice I would give to every starting person would be outsource all non-critical functions. Don't think about dollars and cents. Don't be penny-wise, pound-foolish. Any non-mission-critical function should be outsourced, whether it's your bookkeeping, whether it's your compliance, whether it's your marketing. Although these are very, but you're in the business of providing clinical care, and that's the thing which you need to keep in-house and do an extremely good job of doing that. Everything else which can be done better by an expert should be done by an expert.
So, like, let's just say, right, okay, we want to see that different dentistry. We want to out, you think we should outsource everything. But wouldn't that kind of be like, I'm spending more money that way if I outsource all those things?
In the short run.
In
the long run, you don't. Yeah.
Why?
In the long run, you don't. I mean, if, because the results, you're not, if you're talking about spending direct dollars versus indirect dollars where you factor in your time, the doctor's time, and let's say if a doctor's production per hour is, let's just pick a number, $450 an hour, and he or she spends, you know, 30 minutes every day doing bookkeeping, then, you know, that's half an hour. That's $200, approximately $225 an hour she's spending on doing something she should not be doing.
Mm-hmm. But do you think you're right? Because in the short run, you're kind of thinking like, oh, I'm saving money. But right. In reality, I mean, you can be owning more skills and making more, right, clinically.
And you should, absolutely, you should focus your time on how to do better dentistry. And if you have time, you should focus your time how to take courses so you can do better dentistry and do more comprehensive dentistry.
Is that what your software, that's what your software Practice does? Like, talk to us about Practice, your software. What is that about?
So with Practice, what we're trying to do is kind of take the same vision, which I discussed with you, that we should be able to manage all non-clinical functions of a dental office in a corporate kind of setting. So if you need to hire people, you should be able to hire people without having to go through jumping hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And we have created actually the HR part of it, where you can go onto our software, you can hire all your employees, you can send them job offer letters, you can have them do their handbook. We have partnered with companies where we can create the job handbook, the employee handbook for you. These are investments you have to make in to run an office. There is no circumvention around it, because they come back to bite you really hard 3, 4, 5 years down the road when some disgruntled employee is going to complain to OSHA or is going to file a lawsuit about something really stupid. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's going to come out, oh, you have not maintained your health records for employee health records that's supposed to be maintained for 30 years. So our software is capable of doing all that. It's going to manage your complete HR. Eventually, it's going to link with your payroll system, which we are in the process of developing. So you should be able to run your payroll through it, do your time management. You should be able to hire your employees through it, do your background check through it. You will be able to eventually link our software to job boards, so you can actually see all the, you will have your resume repository on our software, so you don't have to like save resumes in Google Mail or, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And once the employee is hired, then we manage entire compliance through software, so the employee can get training. Every employee should be trained before they hit the clinical floor. That's the law. No one follows the law, because they call a consultant in once a year to do training, OSHA training, HIPAA training. But our software actually does that on-site, on-demand, where any employee who's hired will be able to see the video training, will be able to take the test, and then read the site-specific OSHA and HIPAA manual before they touch anything. So tomorrow, if they get a needle stick, you know, they cannot sue you and say, I did not know about this job duty, was had this risk. So that is addressed through the software. And then we have been able to, we will be able to give you a complete SDS library onto on your on our software, where you don't have to maintain all this paper. That's on the just on the compliance side for an employee. And then when you have your practice compliance, we are able to give you a complete practice compliance solution where you know when your medicine expires, you know when your posters expire, you know when your drugs expire, you know when the waste disposal, hazardous waste needs to be picked up. All that is managed through software, so it will get automated slowly so that you don't have to do any of that. You'll just get a notification, and that notification then will lead to a sequence of events which will then make sure that you're compliant all the time. And lastly, it will be able to manage your continuing education credit. So if you take a course, every state has mandatory courses and non-mandatory courses. It will give you a list. You will be able to manage your courses through it. You'll be able to upload your certificates. You'll be able to track your continuing education credits. You'll be able to make sure that you're staying compliant from all sides, 360 degrees. And then we give you a really a deep insight into your systems. There are a lot of systems out there like Dental Intel and Practice by Numbers, which have gone really deep into giving your practice numbers. What we've been able to do is integrate all the separate systems out there, including your payroll system, your QuickBooks bookkeeping system, and your practice system. So we integrate into EagleSoft, or we integrate into PracticeWorks, or into Dentrix, and pull data from there. Then we'll pull data from your payroll system, we'll pull data from your accounting system, and give you a real-time dashboard of the health of your practice, which doesn't really exist in the market right now, because everyone just kind of gives you your practice management data in a nice format. And what that does is it gives you information not only about your revenue, but about your cost.
Okay. So it keeps also track of like your, what you're producing, right?
Absolutely.
So it's human resources, right?
Well, so it has a bunch of modules. You know, more information is available on the website. You can look at it. It's www.practice.io. But we are creating different silos of solutions. And the thinking again is that, okay, we are going to give you a HR for a chief HR officer, and then we're going to give you
compliance consultant,
financial system for a CFO, and then we're going to give you a chief compliance officer through a compliance module, and then eventually we'll be able to tie into different marketing systems and give you a marketing module. And if it becomes smart enough, the software will be able to tell you that, hey, last year in November we had low patient flow, you should pick up marketing this year in October, so your November patient flow. But that's where we want to go. Are we there today? No. Have we started the kind of the roadmap to get there? Yes. And we've seen a lot of interest in the software, not only from independent offices, progressive physicians and doctors who want to kind of stay ahead of the game, but also from DSOs who are like, oh, this is really great, because, you know, we all, they all do it manually right now.
Yeah, you're right. People do a lot of their bookkeeping and accounting firms and payroll firms and all these things like that. You know what I mean? They have all that.
Well, even the compliance, which is a fully built system at this point, like we have launched the compliance part of it. They do it all manually. They have all these checklists. And, you know, what we are doing is we're moving away from the manual, you know, paper-based system.
Got you. Wow, this is interesting. And then so pretty much this is all on the operations, right?
Practice. It's all operations, yes. It's all about people, processes, and product, right? So I cannot have any, you know, I can only tell, I can hire a good dentist and they will create a good product, but I can manage the people and the processes really well. And so I'm focusing on the people and the processes.
So would somebody need to...
These are the three P's of making a successful practice.
Got you. And somebody would need to be trained in this software though, right? Because it's pretty complex.
No, it's self-service, actually. You log in, you set up your username, password, we set up your practice, and after that it's self-service. And it has a product component and a service component, and you can have your OSHA manual done by your own consultant and upload into our software, or we can develop it for you and through our partners and give you a site-specific OSHA manual. And of course, that costs a little bit more, but we can give you a turnkey solution, and it's very simple to use. It's being beta tested in Massachusetts right now by about 6 or 7 practices. And you can understand my users are all, you know, middle-aged females who are office managers, have been at their practice for 15 to 20 years, are not necessarily computer savvy, but they're all loving the software.
They're all loving the software. What are they saying, like, about it as far as, like, how has it boosted anything?
Well, the first thing it does is it gives them, you know, peace of mind. You know, right now they just don't know if they're compliant or not. So tomorrow, if somebody shows up in your office, you'd be scrambling. And now you have a single place to go log in and show everything from soup to nuts. If they want to see your record when you did this training 7 years ago, it's in that software. They want to see your BLS certificate, it's in the software. They want to see whether, you know, you meet, whether your EpiPen has expired or not, it's in the software. They want to see your continuing education credit for your infection control training, it's in the software. So it's a single place where you can go and get everything from your employee records, your practice records, your compliance records, and you can even put your bank statements there if you want to put there, or if you want to put your business associate agreements there, you can put your business associate agreement there.
For tax purposes, can someone just pull this up and print it out, and then that's it?
Well, if you want to use it as a tax, as a document repository, yes. But from a QuickBooks point of view, your accountant has access to it, so they can pull the data right from it. And so you don't have to send them, you know, I mean, that's kind of how it works anyway these days. You don't have to send them any physical documents.
Mm-hmm. And so this is going to scratch a lot of itches, but like when you were creating it, what did you envision? Why did you create it?
Well, I created it because I saw that dental offices are really struggling when it comes to management processes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are trying to create a product which can, you know, put everything under a single user interface. So if somebody wants to do billing, dental billing, and they want to outsource it, they can integrate with our software and then go to somebody who does dental billing or credentialing and manage it through our software. That's our thinking. So they don't have to manage multiple separate solutions.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow, this is really interesting. And you say it's going to go live this Friday?
Yeah, we are launching it this Friday. We have an audience of about 50 people coming for the launch, and I'm super excited about it.
And it's
nervous and excited.
Yeah. And it's going to be available everywhere, all over the world, or only U.S.? Or?
Well, in U.S. only, because we are building state-specific compliance rules and logic. So we're launching state by state. So we're launching right now the New England states, Tennessee, mm-hmm. and California soon. Because every practice, every state has laws which differ when it comes to board compliance. And so it's not only just, you know, your federal OSHA and HIPAA compliance, but it's also board compliance we are managing through the software. So we're launching one state at a time. And it really becomes part of your daily workflow.
The practice, practice. Yes. And you guys are using it too?
Oh, of course, yeah.
What have you seen, like, as far as what can practice besides clinical, like, can it not do?
Well, I mean, right now we have not focused on, like, the billing part of it. We have not focused on the marketing, and we haven't made it smart because we're in the early stages. So right now my office manager in my practice is able to save a lot of time because, like, we just had to go through Delta credentialing, and it took her 5 minutes to print all the documents.
Man. Okay, wow. This is good.
My hope is in the long run that I can email those documents straight out of our software to Delta. That'll be a bigger challenge because Delta is far behind when it comes to their technology.
Yeah,
you have your liability certificates in there. You have your continuing education certificates. You have your Hep B certificates in there. Then you can just press a button and
get it.
Your credentials.
Yeah, can you now price for this? Is it determined on practice, right, or is it just like a set price, or how does that work?
So pricing is always very difficult. We're trying to figure that out right now. We are giving, so it's kind of a freemium model that if you just want to use the HR solution for up to 10 employees, you can use it on your own for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to use the compliance module after the HR, then it's $199 a month. And then if you want to use the bookkeeping and the financial dashboard, it depends on, how big your practice is. It'll start at about, $200 a month, $199 a month. But keep in mind, we're not just giving you a financial dashboard. We're in that process. We're doing your bookkeeping as well.
Got you. And all the
and so
all everything else.
Yeah, so reconciling all your bank statements, your credit cards, so that's where I'm talking about non-core functions. We want to make sure that doctors don't spend time doing non-core functions. And I've read a lot of posts out there that say, oh, save the money. It's just entering the invoices. Bookkeeping is not just entering the invoices. It's kind of knowing that, your brain and your heart are functioning in sync and are functioning healthy. So you have to make sure that somebody's not overcharging, undercharging, an employee's not stealing. There's no double bookkeeping happening because you can get a tax audit, which happens 5 years from now. So that's why it's important to do it the right way the first time.
Got you. Do you see that quite a bit? Have you ever experienced that where an employee was stealing from you?
I've had that instance once, and it wasn't really direct stealing. It was offering write-offs to her boyfriend, and of course, that was that employee was history at that point.
Can practice catch that? The software?
No, practice is not in the business of kind of clinical aspect of it. So we are not like looking at what write-offs are happening on a patient-specific charts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if what practice can catch is that in any given month you go outside the normal, and we know what the normal is because we are calculating your averages on real-time basis, then it will flag that for you.
Okay. Wow. And so
if you spend 5% of your money on lab every month,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly, you get this new employee and suddenly you start spending 9%, then we can catch that for you without, and that won't happen 90 days from now. It'll happen within a week.
Oh, wow. That's really good. And then so by next week, this is definitely going to be available, right? Like we can go look into it.
Oh, it's being used right now. Yeah. It's being used right now. We're just launching it in Massachusetts, making a public announcement this week.
So, because I know it does a lot. It's like the operations side of your business. So, like everybody listening, if you want, just go in the show notes below and click the link so you can definitely learn more about this software.
Yeah, play around, give me feedback, ask questions. We're building it out and we want to hear from more people, more users, so that we can build features what are needed in the market rather than what I think are the right features. I mean, that's kind of the objective.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and then last question. What advice do you want to give to dental students or new dentists just starting out?
People who are starting out, I'll give simple advice. And I already gave part of it, which is saying that, focus on dentistry. Don't focus on the business aspect of it. And find yourself a partner to work with because, good days are good days and, you're happy about it, but it's when the tough days are there, you need a partner, a shoulder to cry on. So have a business partner, have another dentist as a partner, and make sure you find somebody who complements your skills. So if you're good at clinical aspect of it, the other person should be good at business aspect of it. Or if you're good at marketing, then he or she should be good at operations. And that would really help you grow your business and run it like a business and not like a mom and pop operation, because eventually you will see that if you run it like a mom and pop operation, your profits are going to reflect that.
Gotcha. Alrighty. Thank you so much, Vic, for being with us. It was a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, tell our listeners where they can find you.
So the website is www.practice.io with a Y. So practys.io. Just go to the website, send me an email, and I'm pretty good at responding. And of course, I'm on Michael's Facebook group, so you can always go to the startup group and look me up over there.
Yeah, alrighty, Vic, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure, and we'll hear from you soon.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good day.
All right, guys, and we're back. Thank you so much, Vic, for taking the time out of your busy day to come and be on an interview, be on a podcast with me. I appreciate it. I truly, truly appreciate it. Guys, go reach out to him. Let him know, like, hey, man, heard you on the podcast. Really enjoyed it. Go reach out to him if you want to know about Practice. So it's practys.io. And like you heard, it's going to go live this Friday. And this episode's going live today. So it's almost about to be, today is Thursday or Wednesday, one of those days. And it's almost about to be live, his product. So, I mean, go check it out. Go in the show notes below and click on it and see what it can do for your practice. It really will take over a lot of headaches in the operations side. And it's kind of true what he says. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, when you go into the clinical side of something, right? I remember when I was going to school and to do nutrition and things like that, you don't really think about the business aspect, right? You just want to help people. And I know a lot of the times when we go into the clinical side, when we become a dentist, we're not like, I know what I want to do. I want to own a practice. I want to own multiple practices and that's it. The clinical side, I don't know how I'm going to deal with that, but whatever, who cares, right? No, you do it because, you know, that's your main focus sometimes, most of the times, is the clinical side. And so it'd be nice to kind of outsource that. You know what I mean? Not waste so much energy on that scenario. So a couple points that I liked about this episode was how he let some things slide and that are okay. You know, you have to outweigh the good and the bad with the employees. Are there more good than perfect? Are there more fantastic things that you know can't be replaceable or are super hard to replace? Fantastic, right? But are the bad things in big too? Are they really easy to, you know, brush off, or are they really hard to brush off? And if they're hard, why? And can you manage without that or with it? So that's something I thought was really interesting. Another thing I thought that was really interesting is that when I asked him what his best ROI was, he really couldn't pinpoint that because it all takes, there's all touch points, right? In the sense, like, okay, people look at mailers, that's the first time they hear of you, then they come across you through a booth, right, at an event, then they sign up, and then maybe they're like, okay, I'm not going to be able to come in the day I put on the sign-up sheet, so then a month later passes, then they see you on social media, and they're like, oh, man, I should go. I actually have an anniversary picture taken that needs to be taken, and I need to whiten my teeth or whatever, right, and then they go. And then they tell you, hey, I saw you, yeah, on social media. And then I was like, oh, I need to come in here, right? But really the touch point was from the very beginning of the mailer. So you can't really pinpoint an ROI, but you do need to be doing marketing, right? That's an important thing. And you do have to have a budget for it as well. Another thing is I like how he adjusts his hours to the patients. I think we all should be doing that now. I think kind of like the 9-to-5 type of deal is kind of getting out the window a little bit. I mean, would you guys agree or no? I mean, let me know if you agree or not. Maybe in different towns, maybe the 9-to-5 is always going to be there forever. But I think now it's kind of like you can open less days, but different hours. And I think it's important to adjust to your community. So, yeah, guys, those are my takeaways. Let me know what you think your takeaways are, or let me know your takeaways. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Facebook under The Dental Marketer. And if you like what you're hearing, guys, please do me a favor and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps me out a ton. I'm trying to get to 60 reviews. So please just take like a minute out of your day while you're eating, you know, your pho in the raining day and be like, you know what? I'm here. Instead of on Instagram, let me just get out really quick and then leave a 5-star review on Michael's podcast. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much if you do that. With that being said, guys, don't forget to check out Local Med. Go in the show notes below, check out Practice and Local Med. If you guys are looking for online scheduling, if you want more opportunities, get Local Med. plain and simple, guys, plain and simple. Like, if you want to be open, quote unquote, open 24 hours, get local med, because you can always have someone book an appointment any time of the day at whatever moment. So get local med. Alrighty, and I'm gonna put a link to the show notes below on local med. So yeah, with that being said, guys, I'll talk to you soon.